everyone. We're back. And we're back in a very fun way.
Super fun.
Live. I mean, it's not live when you listen to it.
Well, yeah, it's live for us. Well, it's always live for us.
Well, no, it is, because we are alive. We're actually recording in Revival because we're kind of allowed to open back up again.
Yeah, so, halfway.
Halfway open. We thought, let's record here. So if you hear some background noises, we have a live studio audience, and they're listening to us, and it's going to be a good time. Our fans of...
They don't know they're fans yet, but they're fans.
They will be.
We got
two more. We got two fans just a little bit ago. We gave them some...
Yeah, but we had to give them alcohol.
We did.
We bribed them to be fans.
That's how we did it. So anyway, my name is Mike Stojic, and you... Who are you again?
I am Joey Baba.
Is that how you pronounce it? Baba?
No, it's just Joey Barber.
Like all these years, I've been saying it Barber.
It's just Joey Barber.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just joking.
Mike Stogie.
Hey, who let those crickets in here?
Cue the crickets.
It's a bad joke. I deserved it.
What are we talking about today,
hey,
Mike?
Hey, guys. We're here with another episode.
Our Curious Podcast?
Just in case you forgot what you were listening to, since we didn't mention it, we're the Bar Curious Podcast, and we're recording live at a Revival, and I'm Mike, and that's Joey, and today we are talking about the ancestor, the granddaddy of all alcoholic beverages.
The oldest alcoholic beverage, so we think.
Yeah, I think most people...
But I would say so.
Say that it is, and it's mead.
Yeah. And mead is awesome.
Yeah, mead is pretty amazing, and we're actually drinking on three different types of mead, one local fave, and then two Slavic meads, which is pretty cool because that's kind of my heritage.
Yeah.
And I guess as local is now my
I guess
heritage.
That's your local.
My local.
So we have Durham local and then Mike's local.
The mead of my people.
I think a lot of people have heard of mead, but probably don't know what it is. I mean, that's kind of what the podcast is about, but...
Yeah, I mean, I know that's me, you know, me with mead. I didn't really know.
Right.
I knew it was fermented from honey. But one of the biggest misconceptions for me, and I don't want to say it's my biggest disappointment in researching this.
Mike, you've talked about this all day. This is Mike's biggest disappointment of the year. And we're going through COVID. This is his biggest disappointment.
I just want you to know, I really thought mead was this Viking warrior drink. You know, I was like, yeah, mead and Vikings and Valhalla, you know,
man,
and
die and strong.
Man, strong. Drink mead, pillage and conquer. And it turns out it's not that at all.
Nope. I mean, they may have drank some of it. So, all right. So what is mead?
Let's talk a little bit about what it is. Yeah, right. So it's an alcoholic beverage created by fermenting honey with water. Sometimes you'll see it in various fruits, spices, grains, and hops, and we'll talk about variations later. But it's very simply honey and water, open air fermentation. So, you know, the yeast, the natural yeast that occurs naturally in the area lands itself into the honey.
Airborne yeast.
Yeah, it mingles with the sugar and kicks out alcohol. And what you have is mead.
Yeah, and you can get very different meads too, because I mean it goes anywhere from 3.5% up to 18%. So it's sort of like wine in the way that, you know.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of times you'll hear it referred to as a honey wine.
But that depends. I will say, and looking at that too about the honey wine, is it kind of depends on where you are in the world, because I saw that a lot of cultures say it is not honey wine. Like Hungarians, for instance, they say that honey wine is honey water fermented with other fruits. So like blackberries or blueberries or something like that. So it's more of a wine product, whereas mead is strictly honey water fermented. Most of us say honey wine, but...
I don't know. Potato, potato.
I mean, at this point, that's probably.
But I totally get it. I mean, if you're going to draw a line in the sand on mead, I mean, and honey wine, I suppose that's your line in the sand. But as you come to find out, and we'll talk variations much later, the variations are all those fruits and spices. And
oh, yeah, it's a lot of variations.
You know, obviously, the defining characteristic of mead is that the majority of the fermentable sugars derive from honey, right? Because it wouldn't come from water.
The water sugars.
But the fun thing is that it can come in all different I guess I'll talk a little bit about variations.
We might as well jump on variations. That'll help out.
I was going to wait, but let's just do it now. So
we can come back to it again also.
So mead comes in a variety of ways. Mead, because it's the oldest and it's the OG of alcoholic beverages, it can be pretty much whatever it wants it to be. So you'll see it sometimes come as a still. It comes carbonated. It can come naturally sparkling. It can be dry, semi-sweet, or sweet. So pretty much whatever you want it to be, it's going to be that.
Right.
Extremely versatile.
Yeah, and with that too, I mean, depending on the type of honey that you use, gives it different flavors also.
Right, of course. So, and I think if you're listening and you're a big fan of local honey, you probably already know that. The different honeys take on different flavor profiles,
yeah,
depending on the bees and I guess the pollen that they're pulling from the different flavor.
Yeah, their diet of nectar and pollen gives it whatever honey you're looking for.
Which is, honey is like a superfood anyway, you know, and if you have allergies, that's one of the natural remedies is you should eat the honey local to where you live.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure honey, isn't honey the only, have the longest shelf life of anything? Like it doesn't go bad like ever?
That would almost lend itself to some of the origin stories that I kind of got about mead and honey.
Yeah.
And part of it being a superfood because it's nutrient dense and sugar rich. You know, if you had a diet that was very low in, well, food, because you're hunting and gathering, but
low in food.
If you're thinking, well, yeah, like 20,000 years ago, think about people. You know, when in the cradle of civilization right there in Africa, and they started expanding out, you know, into the Middle East, you know, Middle East and Africa,
yeah,
and they started expanding
out,
you know, what are you going to carry with you? You can't carry, like, hunting was extremely difficult back then. So, you know, the hunting gathering thing. So honey was probably something that they could take with them and would last a long time. And it was nutrient dense and it was sugar rich. So you provided energy for you to hike 1,000 miles, however long you were hiking to get to wherever you were going.
Yeah, that would make sense with the shelf life also. If they're walking that far or trying to travel that far, that it's, you know, that's one thing that isn't going to go bad.
Yeah, and I also had read on this pretty awesome site about honey and beekeeping, was they think that's kind of the origin story of bees was in that area, because the people who were traveling outside, you know, they started moving across the continent.
Right.
Started, they would take bees with them. I don't know how the hell they carried bees.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I would have left those.
Well, they might have got the queen or.
These things are a lot less dangerous to carry besides a bee.
I got to look it up and I'm going to find it during our break. But there's this lady out of Texas who like rescues beehives, you know, because bees will just set up hives wherever.
Yeah.
And they're honeybees. And we need honeybees. Like it's if we get rid of the bees, that's detrimental to all of us.
Not just honey.
Not just honey, but to people.
Plants and everything.
Yeah, everything dies if the bees dies. So she goes in and she removes these colonies and she finds the queen and she puts it in a box, and then all the other bees just go to it. They like go into the box with the queen, and that's how they move the colonies.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is she does it with her bare hands, and she's not wearing a mask or anything. Like she's just wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
Nope.
And she goes in. I got to find her. I follow her on YouTube. Not YouTube, but what do you call that thing?
Instagram.
Yeah. Because it's really fascinating to see her like reach her hands in and pull these. These
oh, man. Yeah, that's some trust there.
Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, and I'm going to tell you who it is, and then we're going to get on to history.
Hey everyone, Joey Barber here from Bar Curious Podcast. I want to tell you a little bit about my bar in Raleigh, North Carolina. Not only do we specialize in craft cocktails, but we've also won Best Whiskey Bar in Raleigh 2 years in a row. One of the things that sets us apart from the rest is our expansive collection of vintage spirits. We have everything from bourbon, scotch, gin, Amaros, dating back from Prohibition all the way to the 1990s. If there's a unique pour that you're looking for that no one else has, this is your spot. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Blind Barber, or email us at contact@blindbarber.com. Join our email list to be updated on future tastings and private events. Hey, Mike, you know who I hold in high regard?
Who's that, Joey?
mechanics and people who know how to work on cars.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Back when I was a combat engineer in the Marine Corps, I had the opportunity to be a platoon commander of the heavy equipment platoon, and I'll tell you, my guys could fix anything.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have if you don't have the right parts.
That's right, and that's why when you are working on a car, you need to check out my friends, the LKQ crew. They're the number one in auto collision repair industry for parts both body and mechanical. Check them out at lkqcorp.com for more info and all your auto repair needs. LKQ crew.
That's good.
All right, and we're back.
Back to Mead.
Back. So, I...
Did you find the beekeeper?
I did. I did exactly what I said I would do because I'm a man of my word. What?
Okay. So there, Joey.
So shut up. So you got to check her out. It's the Texas Bee Works on Instagram, and I'm sure she's got other things too, like YouTubes and Reddits and stuff, but... Yeah, man, look that up. That's
Texas Bee Works.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, Texas Bee Works.
Cool. Yeah, that was some crazy videos. Like just picking bees up by the hand and transporting them.
Man,
essentially,
I would be afraid of that.
I'm not doing that. Speaking of bees and taking care of bees, my neighbor has a little bee. What do you call it? Bee box or beehive?
A beatbox.
A beatbox. So, no, the daughter of our neighbor is wants to learn about bees and taking care of bees and stuff. So, they have, like, this little hive outside that's kind of cool. Nice. But I try not to walk over there near it because, obviously, it's a ton of bees.
Yeah, I don't think they're they don't attack unless provoked, you know, because if bees
Yeah, but
sting,
I don't
want to
unintentionally
dead.
Provoke it, though.
If you go over with your hands out and good intentions, I don't know.
Like you're going to hug them?
Yeah. Like you're going to get a hug, a bee hug. Could you imagine that?
All right, where did this mead come from?
Yeah, Dios mío. So, so mead. Some of the earliest. Well, you found this. What did you?
Yeah.
Find
so
in
one
China?
Of the things that we found is that 7,000 BCE they found. Well, now they found pottery from China that was from 7,000 BCE that had evidence of having mead in the pottery.
Right, it was some of the chemical signatures
of what
they found
right.
suggest that potentially mead was there. I also found that in 2800 to 1800 BCE, which is archaeologically known as the Bell Beaker culture, they found drinking vessels which were known as Bell Beakers, which is why it's known as the Bell Beaker culture. So that's interesting. So the culture, the archaeological culture, is named after a drinking vessel. No, you can Google it. Hey, don't take my word for it, kids.
Why don't you just Google it?
Why don't you just Google it? Bell Beaker culture. So the Bell Beaker, what it is, if you think about it, what a bell is, and you turn it upside down
right.
and you remove the dangly thing.
The bell part.
The bell part that bangs on the bell. You pour stuff in there and you drink out of it. And evidently that was the drinking vessel of choice.
So that's the era that it was in, huh?
Yep. So they decided to call that the Bell Beaker culture. It ran all through Europe, and it's pretty neat. I now want one of those to drink out of.
We have to find you one.
Awesome. But they also found residual samples. They actually found residual samples. From
oh,
what
nice.
I found. So not just these chemical signatures, but literally residual samples of mead inside some of these Bell Beakers.
Wow, that's
pretty
intense.
Neat. Yeah, but the thing is it wasn't until much later, the 1700 to 1100 BCE, where they actually found written descriptions of mead. But it wasn't called mead. It was called soma, and it was a ritual drink mentioned in the hymns of the Rig Veda? Am I saying that right? The Rig Veda. Rig Veda? Maybe it's the Rig Veda. So it's one of the sacred books of the Vedic religion, which, if you don't know what that is, it's an ancient Indian collection of Sanskrit hymns. And this particular one was one of four sacred texts of Hinduism known as the Vedas. Vedas.
Huh.
And multiple times, soma was mentioned, and it's believed that it was mead.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
And yeah, so it was a part of the Indo-Aryan peoples of the Northwest India to the Western Ganges Plains in ancient India. And that's like
the furliest time.
I couldn't decide if I wanted to say first or earliest.
So that's a long time ago if it's the furliest.
So it's the earliest time that we see it actually written any time, which was, you know, between 1700 and 1100 BCE, which is a long time ago.
Yeah. Man,
that's like almost 4,000 years ago. 3,000 to 4,000 years yeah. ago.
And what's cool too is, I mean, most of, you know, bourbon, like we talk about, it was discovered by chance, and there's a lot of, most things that we think of were just kind of discovered just by chance, not trying to discover it. And mead was presumed to have happened the same way. What I found is that early foragers would likely drink the rainwater from beehives. You know, I mean, I don't know why you would grab a beehive to drink it, but. So the beehive would fill up with water. They would take the beehive, drink the water out of it, and they discovered mead that way because the honey that was inside mixing with the rainwater.
It fermented.
And the natural yeast in the air would ferment. It's not going to be like mead that you're drinking today, but it was the earliest form, I guess, of that.
That, you know, I always wondered why Winnie the Pooh just stuck his hand in the tree and pulled the honey out.
It's for the alcohol. It's not for anything else.
Now I know.
It's the mead.
He was getting sloshed every time.
Oh, what do you think that whole getting the pot stuck on his head was all about?
That's why he
was hammered.
That's why he was so nice all the time. He was just wasted. It's hard to be angry bear if you're drunk off mead.
Well, Eeyore was always like butthurt
because he didn't share it.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh had all the mead.
It all comes around. It all makes sense, Joe.
And now it makes sense. Now it makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah. And so I saw too that that it had a huge influence in Greek times. I don't know if you read that or not. Like during Greek ceremonies.
Yeah, during the golden age of ancient Greece, mead was the preferred drink.
Yeah, and they considered bees to be the gods' messengers, and that mead was associated with immortality and powers such as divine strength and wit.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
saw that too.
Since they thought that the bees were the messengers from the gods, they thought that what they produced were, you know, gifts from the gods, essentially.
Right. So not only that, but even Aristotle discussed mead. But one of the coolest things I think I saw, I think you saw this too, was one of the earliest recipes for mead. And it was by the Hispanic Roman naturalist, Columella. Columella. Yeah, mm-hmm. that sounds right. Columella. Yeah. And he had a recipe. And so obviously, you know, I don't read Latin. But no, do you?
No.
Oh, okay. But I found it translated from Latin. And he said, take rainwater kept for several years and mix a sextarius of this water with a pound of honey. For weaker mead, mix 9 ounces of honey. The whole is exposed to the sun for 40 days and then left on the shelf near the fire. If no rainwater, boil spring water. I'm like, what?
Years worth of rainwater? How long does it take to make this stuff?
Where do you find years of rainwater?
So a six.
I feel like it's not translated properly. I don't know who the guy was that did this. But really, where are you going to find years of rainwater? And then why would you boil? Okay, so I gotta go off this direction for a minute. We boil water to purify it.
Right.
In a sense, right? You kill off whatever bacteria is in the water, right?
Yeah.
Spring water is, I think, naturally purified already, depending on how if it's bubbling up fresh spring water, then it's come through whatever limestone or minerality deposits underground that filter it, and what you're coming up with is a very pure mineral-rich water.
Right.
So if you're boiling spring water, which is already a pure water, to make it even purer.
Super pure water.
Okay, so that's one category, pure water.
Or
but if you got years old rainwater.
Dirty ass rainwater.
That's dirty
water.
I'm sure.
You can pick one of the two. It doesn't matter
I'm
which
sure,
one.
Like, when the rain first fell out of the air, you know, and it landed in this bucket, it was probably clean.
It's like the first snow. Like you don't use the first rainwater to make
mead. But
I
if
guess.
You're letting the water sit in a bucket for years. How gross is that water?
And a sextarius of water. How much is that?
Oh man, I got that right here in another set of notes. So,
oh, you're gonna go through the whole thing of what a Sextarius is? I was gonna give the shorthand version of it.
No, it's got to be the complicated.
All right, complicate this one up.
All right, so the Sextarius was defined as 1/48 of a cubic foot, known as an amphora quadrantal. So, using the value 296 millimeter for the Roman foot, an amphora quadrantal. can be computed at approximately 25.9 liters. So a Sextarius, by the same method, would theoretically measure 540.3 milliliters, or 18.27 U.S. ounces, which is about 95% of an imperial pint. So you're looking at just over 18 ounces.
So a Sextarius is about 18 ounces, more or less.
Okay, you want the nickel definition, or do you want like the scholarly definition? All right,
so there's about 18 ounces of water, and then a Roman pound is about three quarters of a pound that we know. So
Was it 3/4?
Yeah. Well, more or less. Like, yeah. Oh, okay. Plus or minus, yeah.
As we know it today.
Yeah, as we know it today. So 3/4 of a pound of honey and 18 ounces of water. Let it age 40 days in the sun.
Stick it on the shelf next to the fire.
And then pour it in a glass. That's
bada
your
bing,
mead.
Bada boom.
Yeah.
And right then you're there. Then you're partying. Right?
Well, if you want to go through some complicated math, I have some complicated math for you also.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Let's do more complicated.
All right. So this will be a quick complicated math. So most meads require about 2 gallons of honey to make. They're like a little batch. And if you take 2 gallons... and think about one single honeybee produces about 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey. So if you convert 2 gallons into teaspoons, that's 1,536 teaspoons. So it would take one bee 18,432 days or 50 years to produce that 2 gallons worth of honey.
The bee's working hard.
That bee is working.
Give that bee
his little hive off.
So if we had 100 bees, how many days would it take?
So 100, so you carry the one.
It was also a popular drink in medieval Ireland. Beekeeping showed up there around the 5th century, and with it, obviously, so did mead.
Yeah.
Because if you have mead, that's not right.
If you
have bees,
then you have honey.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, I went the wrong way on
that
one.
If you have bees, you have honey.
Bees give you honey. Honey gives you mead. And everyone's having a good time. So much so that there was a banquet hall on the Hill of Tara known as the Tech Mead Charada. I really got to stop giving myself these hard words. It's a Gaelic word. It's Tech Mead Charada, which translates to House of the Circling of Mead.
The Circling of Mead?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So kind of like in our episode when I was talking about the mead sweats and you know, you're like the sun in your own universe and the meads like orbit around you. Could you imagine being the son of your own mead house?
It'd be like the mead sweats.
And then the mead, I guess, maidens would just kind of like circle around you with different styles of mead.
Different styles of mead and honey.
Yeah, and you just drink and have a good time.
I like that. Nice.
Well, we got a bit of a universe of mead right here.
We do. Do we have time to jump on that now? Or
yeah, why not? Yeah. I mean, this is a good place. We're basically sitting in our own mead hall.
We are sitting in a mead hall.
Yeah, if Beowulf was here, he would join us. Since Beowulf
or Chaucer or Aristotle. Queen Elizabeth, believe it or not, Queen Elizabeth II drank mead and had a favorite recipe containing rosemary, thyme, bay leaves, and sweetbriar. There's a little fun fact for you.
I like fun
Queen
facts.
Elizabeth II. Self-facts.
Nice. Self-facts. We love our facts.
So what do we have as far as mead here?
Well...
Okay.
I love that you're asking me. You brought it.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right. I brought some mead for us to try.
I'm like, I can give you a guess at what we got.
Mike didn't know this was being brought, so I brought some mead for us to try during this. We got it from Bottle Revolution in Raleigh off of Lake Boone Trail. Shout out to our friends over there.
What?
Specifically Keeley.
Keeley that helped
us out.
Shout out.
And picking out some mead for us to try. So we've got two that are. Do you have them?
Slavic. Yep.
Two Slavic. Yeah. Mike's got them turned towards him, so I'm not sure why.
Yeah, that way I can look at them.
Yeah. So we have two that are from Medovina. Is that what it says on yours?
Yeah.
Yeah. Two Medovina. It's a Slavic mead. So one is just with the forest honey, and one is with forest honey and honeydew. So it's sort of like a blend.
Right. And then our third mead is actually a local.
Local.
Right out of Durham.
Durham, yeah.
Which is pretty dope.
What's the name of theirs?
Honey Girl Meadery.
Honey Girl Meadery. Go check them out, too.
Man, I love that name. What a cool name. And that's a great bottle. So the one we're drinking now is a ginger mead. So we talked about different variations. Here's one with ginger in it.
Yeah, they had a couple. We haven't tried all their stuff, but they have like a chai mead and I think they have like a blackberry mead, I believe. Nice. But anyway, the one that we have is a ginger mead. So
this is cool. I'm excited. I'm excited for that one.
I think the first one we have is the blend, correct? Yes.
Is it okay?
It's blossom honey and honeydew, and it's a little bit lighter than the other.
Well, it definitely drinks like a wine.
Oh yeah, and it's sweet. It's not sweet.
Not like Moscato wine sweet, but
right. It's not horribly sweet, but it does have sweetness to it.
What is that? Like a?
There's a hint of honey I'm getting out of it.
Does anyone else detect honey in this mead?
Am I getting honey out of this mead?
Yeah, but it definitely is floral, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's probably that bright honey blossom.
It's pretty bright.
It's definitely bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, refreshing. If this was chilled, this would be really good.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't bring it chilled, Mike.
Yeah, try harder next time, Joey.
Looks like I brought it.
So what's the second one?
So the second
one is the one with the honeydew, right?
Yeah, the second one's darker. It is Old Slavic mead from Medovina. It says dark from forest honey.
Man, for me, it has like almost a port wine finish to it.
Yeah, yeah. So this is
not as bright.
I like the nose on it. The nose is
The nose is pretty great.
A ton of like dark fruits on the nose.
And then our honey girl.
Our friends in Durham. Go check them out.
Wow, the first thing I notice on this is ginger.
Holy moly. From the ginger mead. So the first one that we tried, the first
the ginger really
Medovina one is 13.5%. I imagine the second one's the same. Yeah, the second one. Both of the Slavic ones are 13.5%, and the one from Durham is at 12.5%.
It's really good. The Durham one is really good. This is my second time going through it, and man, that ginger is in there. That's nice.
Yeah, off the nose. I really like that ginger on the nose. We're going to have to go take a little trip to see these guys and
talk
to them about their
now
stuff.
That we know they're,
because I didn't know about them until Keely at Bottle Rev gave them a shout out and told me to pick up this bottle.
So we're going to sit here and drink mead while you guys listen
to
commercials.
Honey Girl Meadery on their label, it says, "For this ginger mead, we infuse fresh and dried locally grown ginger in our off-dried traditional honey wine."
Nice. Oh, see,
the result is a mingling of light honey sweetness with the warmth and complexity of ginger. That's exactly what I get from
that. That's totally what I'm getting. There's no misrepresentation at all. That
is truly
what it is. So as Joey and I sit here and drink this mead, and we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back. We'll be back because we're going to talk about different variations and some interesting fun facts of mead.
Yes.
And you're probably wondering where the Vikings are. So we're gonna have to talk about that.
That's
too.
Exactly what Mike was wondering too.
I was. And we'll be right back. Hey guys, it's your old friend Mike here, and I want to tell you about my bar, Revival 1869. And though we may not be in Raleigh, it is just outside of it in a cute little town called Clayton. We're actually right on the historic Main Street. We focus on craft cocktails. In fact, so much so that we make our own cocktail syrup in-house. We also fresh squeeze all of our juices. I'm also proud to say we have nearly 300 different bottles of whiskey, and that's a lot of fun, especially if you're a whiskey drinker. We also started a YouTube channel. It's called the Revival Social Club. It's more cheeky and fun. We talk history, tell some stories, but most importantly, we teach you how to make your own favorite cocktails at home. So, you know, check that out if you want. You can see everything we have going on at revival1869.com. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook at revival1869. And if you're interested in some of our cocktail syrups, well, check those out at Revival Syrups.
Mike, what are you doing?
Not what?
You're eating all the pizza. Save some for the studio.
Mm-mm. Oh, man, it's too good.
You're supposed to be driving right now.
Yeah, I can multitask, Joey. I can eat a slice of pizza and drive a car.
Mike, there's a pepperoni in your beard.
No, I regret nothing.
You guys want to try the best pizza in Raleigh? Head on over to Vic's Italian Restaurant downtown. Visit them at vicsitalianrestaurant.com and make sure you follow their pizza bus at Vic's Pizza Bus on social media.
So good. Hello and welcome back. We're back with our live audience and...
It has shrunk, though. The audience has gotten smaller.
Well, let's be honest. There's only two to begin with, so.
And they are both gone.
And they left. Even after we gave them mead.
Yeah.
At least they said thank you. That was very nice.
They did. They did. Yeah.
No, they were very nice. They were nice. And if they're listening, maybe they'll write in and say, hey, we were those people. So we're back. We drank three. We told you a little bit about it. So we're going to talk a little bit more about different varieties of mead, since we said earlier on that mead can be whatever it wants to be. I mean, if mead wants to be still or sparkling or naturally carbonated, I've actually never had a carbonated. Have you had carbonated mead?
I've not, but that's usually I will try to find one so we can try it.
I really want to try it. Hot, cold?
Mold. Yeah, like mold wine. Like
anytime I say hot or cold, I always think of Katy Perry. Remember that song? Hot and then you're cold.
Every episode has to have a song.
Always. Involved. Always.
This episode brought to you by Katy Perry.
Yeah, only. If only. Yep. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, mead can pretty much be anything it wants. Really, like I think, Joey, you mentioned earlier, depending on the source of the honey, that changes the flavor profile because obviously it's pollinating different plants.
Right, yeah. So, yes, pretty much like the diet, like the different diets that the different bees have creates the different type of honey.
Right, and then you know, us making the mead, we can do different things by adding things to it, and that's known as an adjunct or a gruet. Gruet is it's an herb mixture used for bittering and flavoring. And in early times, it was used for flavoring beers. This was very popular, especially before the use of hops, the extensive use of hops.
Right.
And then, of course, different fruits, spices, different styles of yeast or different yeast strains will produce different flavoring too, right?
Yeah. And so traditionally also, mead that is not fermented with other fruits or spices or anything is usually used, they usually use a milder honey, so like an orange blossom or a clover. And then the spiced meads use more of a wildflower or blackberry honey. So it's something that kind of comes through a little bit more with the spices.
Nice. That's probably why this guy, the wildflower one, had that flavor profile it did.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't really.
Which one was the middle one? The second one that we tried?
Yeah. The one that was a bit bolder?
Yeah, it was bolder. You said it had more of a port type finish to it.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nice. That makes sense.
So there you go.
All right. And then a mulled mead, typically popular around Christmas, is served warm or hot, and that's almost like a sangria in a way, right? I mean, you have this mead, and then you add different fruits and spices, but you think like more Christmassy.
Yeah, a lot of people use like mulled wine during that time. Like we've had that, we've made that at the bar before.
Am I wrong for saying it's kind of like a sangria?
No, I mean it's very similar to that. So like if you could take like a red wine and heat it up in a crock pot and throw in some different spices like cinnamon and star anise and a couple different things and it gives it that sort of Christmassy type feel to it.
Nice. And in early times, they didn't have crock pots. So what they would do is they would get the poker from the fire because you would poke a fire, you know, the poker.
Get it red hot.
They'd get it red hot and they would stick it in the mead.
We need to try that.
Man, that's the most badass way to warm up anything is to heat up an iron and then stick it in.
And just stick it right in the glass?
Yeah. Yeah, are you kidding me? I mean, you can't control the temperature, but at least you look like you look awesome doing it. So the other thing that I really thought was cool was mead can be distilled. Well, obviously it can be distilled. You can distill anything.
Right.
But it can be distilled, and they call that honey jack when you distill it, which is made similarly to an apple jack, which uses a very different distillation process.
Yeah, like original Applejack. Some of the stuff you see in the store now is not made in this process.
Right. Yeah, that's good clarification. Like the original where they use like a freeze distillation.
Yeah, they freeze it to distill it. Yeah.
Which is crazy because I I'm not very familiar with freeze distillation. And when you, even after you hear it, and I'll just tell you what it is, it's made by partly freezing a quantity of the mead and then straining the ice out of the liquid.
Yeah.
I guess that's freeze distillation.
Yeah. So what they do is they'll halfway freeze it, and then the ice that accumulates on top of it, they'll scrape it off.
Uh-huh.
So they're like, yeah.
So that's, yeah, because the alcohol won't freeze.
Right.
So you're scraping off, I guess, the water, the pretty excess.
Much.
Man, that's amazing. Because when we think distillation, we think big copper pots and, you know,
super hot.
And it has to evaporate. But these guys were just leaving it outside in the cold. And it would,
if you're in Antarctica or like Greenland.
Greenland, yeah.
There's some people in Antarctica, I'm sure.
Who?
Like four scientists or something. I mean, they want to distill.
What? Yeah, but they don't have bees in Antarctica. How the hell are they making mead?
I'm talking Applejack. I'm talking about freezing distilling. All right, back to mead.
Right, as we were, let's hit on some fun facts. Fun facts with Mike and Joey. So I think
fun facts.
First thing. So we already talked about it being the nectar of the gods and doing that sort of thing. But one of the Greek gods who was kind of the main player for mead was Bacchus, and most of us associate Bacchus as the god of wine and good time and partying, but you don't hear him talked about with mead much. Well, he was the god of mead, I guess, very early on in his career as a god. And I guess
young rookie career. We'll give you the mead. We'll give him the mead. He's got a mead.
You got the mead. When mead was cool with the Greeks, and you know, they were like, oh, we love this guy.
Then it started going out of style.
It went out of style, and he's like, no worries, my dudes. Now I'm the god of wine. And they're like, right on, Bacchus, party with us.
Then wine goes out of style.
Well, if he was around today in 2020, and bourbon being what bourbon is, he'd be the god of bourbon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just kind of, he goes with the flow, man. He's Bacchus.
Wherever the party is where he's going to be.
Yeah, he's not worried about, he'll move with the times, dude. Don't worry, my dudes.
God of Red Bull and vodkas.
He would have been in the early 2000s.
15 years ago.
Hey, now he'd be the, what? Is Fireball still popular? Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Fireball sucks.
We don't sell Fireball.
We don't either, man. I refuse.
I'm sure it's still popular.
Yeah, he would know better than to be the god of Fireball. never mind. I'm not going to tell you who the god of Fireball is. Mead was also very medicinal, which should come to no surprise. Everything liquor-related typically was used as simple as medicinal.
Is it liquor? Yep. Medicine.
Done. This was totally medicine. But it probably even makes more sense that mead would have been medicinal, especially even today we use honey as medicinal, right?
I mean,
if you have a sore throat or a cough, you might add honey to your tea.
Yeah.
And of course, tea has got a lot of spices and it feels better. So yeah, obviously, you know, I don't think that's a very hard connection to make with mead.
Yeah.
Especially if you're adding specific herbs and spices to the mead, you know?
That have other medicinal characteristics.
Yeah, man.
Yes. It's just like a super medicine at this point.
Super medicine. But probably the most fun of the facts is honeymoon, the tradition of a honeymoon.
Yeah.
Comes
where that term came from.
Yeah, 100% honeymoon comes from mead. So there you go. That next day of your wedding. Well, I'm kind of waiting for you to come in here, Joey. Are you going to come in and explain this
thing? Yeah, I'm going. So all right.
Stretching this thing.
So through my mind right now, when you're talking about mead being like honey being medicinal, I know. What's the honey that comes in the jar that you use for like on like sores or something?
What?
Yeah,
No.
Yeah.
That's
no.
What aloe vera? That's not honey, Joey.
I'll look it up.
That's not honey either.
It's not neosporin, because
nobody rubs honey on wounds. Open wounds? What? I didn't see that anywhere. I was thinking, you know, I thought you were going with the medicinal thing and you were going to make the connection with the aphrodisiac, you know? Everyone thinks oysters and dark chocolate as aphrodisiacs. And then what we need to do is an episode on Mama Juana.
Manuka honey. That's what I was trying to get to.
What is Manuka honey?
Yeah, it's like a skin cream. It's like a soothing skin cream. Manuka honey.
What?
Yeah. That's what,
bee produces soothing skin
cream? Get out of here. I couldn't think of that word for like 30 minutes.
Which bee species All right. does that?
Honeymoon. All right. The term honeymoon. It came so like Mike said, mead was the original aphrodisiac. It wasn't oysters, it was mead. So that's where the term honeymoon came from. And so
sort of.
Well yeah, I guess so.
Sorry, I don't mean to check you on it. But they thought with the honey and the different herbs, you would drink it after you were married,
right?
For about a month from full moon cycle for the full moon cycle.
Right, after a new marriage. Yep.
Yeah, and yeah. If you got pregnant, not you, because you can't get
pregnant.
Yeah,
not me.
But if your wife got pregnant and she had a boy, then props goes to the mead maker.
What if it was a girl?
Then they're all disappointed. Wow.
So it's kind of like I was saying. Yeah, so it goes back to mead and honey, Mike.
I'm just kidding. Nobody's disappointed. But, you know, they needed...
They thought it helped with fertility.
They did.
Yeah. So that's like Mike said, you drink it for a full moon cycle, and it's supposed to help with fertility after you're newlywed. And so much... They believed it so much so that the bride's father would often include a month's worth of mead as a gift, as part of the dowry to the couple. The dad's like, here you go.
Thanks for taking her off my hands. Here's a jar of honey.
Here's a jar of honey.
I had also read that it was tradition for the man to get just hammered on mead. So he would have as much of that, I guess, mead power. I don't know what you
mead
call.
Power?
Well, the more
you're getting
mead,
on me about Manuka honey. So he just has this enormous amount of fertility. He's just like,
yeah, because
the more
mead with all the mixture of, I guess, whoever the medicine man was, yeah, would mix the mead with the herbs and spices, and then he would drink it. But he needed to drink a lot of it. The more he drank, the more fertile he would be.
Yeah,
I think was the thought process.
Right.
So these guys would be hammered,
just on mead.
Yeah, and they probably got nothing accomplished. You know. So it might be a bit of a counterproductive in this.
I don't know. Maybe honey does different. Maybe you know, it's medicinal.
That is medicinal.
There you go. So mead is starting to come back, come back strong, especially in the United States. I know a lot of people have probably heard of mead but don't know what it is. So that's kind of why we're trying to do this informational thing on it. But there's almost 250 meaderies in the U.S. right now, and they have mead festivals.
Why?
Around the country.
No doubt they're probably the most fun festivals.
A mead festival?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Because I imagine, I just imagine they're just fun. I wasn't going to tell you what I really imagine, but I just imagine they're
fertility
probably
everywhere.
I don't know why I think
a bunch
like,
of mead heads.
Oh my God.
Tons of mead in and, like Viking horns.
Yeah, but the Vikings didn't really. This is. You had to bring this up, and I had to skip over
Mike,
it. Look,
you spent your whole life on Vikings and mead, and
I thought Vikings invented mead, and it turns out they never did. And then I was like, no, surely they had to have something to do with mead, and well, surely they didn't. I mean, they kind of did, but they're not responsible for mead or spreading it.
If you stole it, that kind
of
counts.
They stole it. Yeah, because come to find out, a lot of experts are like, well, no, of course they didn't have mead. They didn't have honey because they were too far north, and bees didn't exist that far north because the life cycle of the plant, the flowering plants, it was too short for bees to live in, to pollinate, right? So the bees couldn't exist that far north. So they think the only ways the Vikings really got mead, well, this is kind of cool. The only ways the Vikings got mead was when they were pillaging and plundering to the south, you know, because they were known as Norsemen.
They'd come down and steal some mead?
Yeah. They were the men from the north, and they'd come down, and they would steal everything. They'd steal your women and children. Remember that sketch? I was like, hide your kids, hide your wives. They're taking in everybody. That was pretty much the Vikings. So they were coming down, and they were stealing stuff, and then they were probably bringing it back up north.
Yeah.
So they brought mead back with them, and then they would drink it to celebrate and probably for other, you know, religious type.
Fertility. And
probably fertility. But one expert does think that there was a time, there was a medieval warming period, so almost like a global warming that happened on Earth between 950 and 1250 CE. Right, so the world got a little bit warmer, and they think when that happened, well, the growing cycle or the plant cycle,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm saying that properly, but was longer, and so that facilitated the influx of bees moving north.
Okay,
because now it warmed up for a longer period of time, which gave the bees an opportunity to live there,
like to pollinate,
and pollinate, and, so, yeah. And create colonies. But even still, they're not certain that that would have been enough time for that to happen.
Right.
So it is, you know, it is conceivable that beekeeping was possible then, even if only in an opportunistic wild beehive robbing sort of way,
because yeah.
they probably would have brought the bees up with them, because it would just take too long for them to migrate north, you know?
Yeah, and plus, why are you going to go up north if you're a bee? Like, I would just chill in some warm climate
somewhere. It just seems like, I know like 950 to 12, that's 300 years, but I think it takes a lot longer for things to move. You know, colonies to stretch out. I mean, I know that sounds retarded, like we just get on a plane and fly, but, you know, if you think like bee colonies, they're not just...
Well, they fly.
They do.
Mike, right, I'm sorry that you were disappointed with the Vikings.
Well, let me
and
tell you this one last thing, and then we'll let everyone go so they can go on their merry way. And I'm going to finish this mead.
Of course.
Of course. So, because I want to tell you this Viking story because I really, really want
to. We have to bring Vikings up.
So, according to Viking legend, mead originated when two warring factions of gods signed a peace treaty and spit into a bowl to seal the agreement. From the bowl was born Kavsir, the wisest of all men. Kavsir met his death at the hands of a pair of dwarves who collected his blood, also known as the Mead of Poetry. The mead passed from the dwarves to a giant. When Odin, the Norse god, learned of the giant held the mead, he ventured down to the giant's lair, seduced his wife, and obtained the mead by transforming into an eagle and swallowing it. Norse legend also states that when warriors arrive in Valhalla in the afterlife, they are rewarded with a draft of mead served by beautiful maidens.
You know what? That probably sounds more realistic than than finding it in pottery.
I'm going to go with that story.
Yeah, that story sounds probably like the real one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. These two...
I mean, turning into an eagle and stealing the mead?
Yeah, yeah. He seduced the giant's wife. Man, this is like a crazy... This is why no one...
believes bar stories?
Anyway... So we finally did it. Me and Joey, we couldn't be more happy. We actually got some listener mail in.
We did.
We did.
Now is the time where
we talk about
what you guys emailed us about.
Unfortunately, it was about something we screwed up. So,
but that's okay. That's okay. If you call us out on something, we will talk about it.
No, we're actually happy too, especially if we mess something up. You know, we want to fix it. We're here because we're curious and we're trying to get the facts out and we're trying to learn.
No, we're not perfect. We're just here to try to help you guys.
Yeah, learn a little bit, laugh a little bit,
right.
Drink a little bit, and have fun and enjoy your life. So go ahead, Joey.
Yeah, so this came from a good friend of ours, Tony, who's a liquor rep around the, well, I guess North Carolina area. He covers everything right now. Mm-hmm. He says, "Hey guys, first of all, I love the podcast." Now, I think we should stop right there.
We should stop right there.
And just... And examine that. So he wanted to say he loves the podcast. So he's obviously a huge fan.
Huge fan.
All right. So he says, "First of all, I love the podcast. Knowing both of you, it really comes through as if we are sitting down together over a drink or five."
That was the best compliment I've ever received.
That was the best compliment?
In my life, yes.
That is a pretty good compliment.
Yeah, it's great.
Because, yeah, we want this to make it feel like that we're just talking to you guys. It's not like we're not trying to be better than anybody. We're having a conversation.
Yeah, for sure. And then in typical IR fashion, here's the correction.
Yeah, so this is the correction from our Uncle Nearest episode where we mentioned that he was born in Maryland and he ended up becoming a slave. And we were like, well, how did that happen? Because Maryland would have been a free state. Well, that's where we misspoke. So Tony, being from Baltimore, Maryland, or the outskirts at least, told us that Maryland was not a free state because it was below the Mason-Dixon line, which we forgot to check.
I guess I just assumed that it was. Well, you know, the other thing is.
So I guess it feels like it's so north.
Yeah.
So Maryland was actually not a free state, and Nathan Green, I guess, knowing that, more than likely probably was born.
We still don't know.
Yeah, we still don't know. We'll figure that out. But potentially could have just been born into slavery rather than, you know, found by.
Yeah, it's still.
It's still up in the air.
We totally did misspeak, and it is. But the thing, I guess, not just checking the Mason Dixon. I guess I just thought it was north of that. I don't know why I thought it.
Yeah. Ended so actually, Virginia. I mean, I knew it really did. Maryland, but I couldn't remember if it was northern part of Maryland or southern. But while we were doing the podcast, I didn't even think of it to even look. So
that's our bad.
Yeah, that's our fault. Sorry about that. Sorry about Maryland. Sorry, you actually were a slave state. So, you're welcome. But thank you, Tony, for sending that in.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
And if you are listening and you have something you'd like to say, and if you want to tell us how much fun it would be to drink one or five drinks with us, well, then, you know, write us and maybe we will sit down and have one to five drinks with you.
Yeah.
And, we'll go from there. So, that's pretty much all we got for our meat episode. If you like what you hear, please subscribe. We're totally on Stitcher now, which is pretty awesome.
Nice.
Still working the iPod thing. Or iPod. Nobody has iPods anymore. iTunes.
iTunes.
Whatever. Apple situation. But we're pretty much on all your favorite podcasting platforms at this point. Well, if you're listening to us, you probably already know that.
That's probably a good point.
But feel free to write in. We're at barcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook at Bar Curious Podcast. And then, you know, if you're feeling saucy, check us out at Revival 1869 and Blind Barber.
Yeah.
Because we own bars.
That was fun. Thank you guys for joining us. That was a pretty cool episode.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Yo, my name is Mike, and I'm here to say, talking about meat in a major way.
Yeah.